Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic lever it's supposed to be.
I kind of think businesses' first clients are their employees. And this is a time where you're going to see if guys are going to stand by their employees or they're going to stand by the dollars. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, you know, some organizations haven't got an employer brand to speak of, well, that they know of. But, you know, they say, you know, true character is revealed under pressure. And, you know, we're going to learn an awful lot about an awful lot of companies over the next few weeks and months, some good and some bad, you know, and it's already starting to happen. You know, and it's, I think you're absolutely spot on. But those organizations that have taken the time to craft a framework of communications based on empathetic insights of what they know about their employees and what they need to feel secure, to have an element of certainty, and, you know, to pull together at times like this, you know, it's, there's never been a more important time to have that strategy and the communications and just the basic human insights of what your people want, need, and desire right now, you know?
Yeah, that's a great, it's a really great point. And it's, for some companies, I think it's like a different language. It's like a foreign language, like this sort of empathetic platter that the dish of, you know, the job needs to be served on. A lot of guys don't even think about that. But this is the time, to your point, that the people who at least have started to think about that can sort of lean into it and start feeding those things you talked about, the how, you know, how are the employees feeling? I mean, because this is scary for everybody.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And it really is. You know, and it's interesting because the whole sort of idea of employer brand was born out of marketing, but it's very quickly surpassed marketing in terms of its authenticity and its, right, its value. It's not just platitudes and slogans. Like, this is stuff that people, times like this, cling to, you know, bond and bind people together and, you know, galvanize people, you know, and, you know, it can be the difference between people pulling in the same direction or not. Yeah.
It's a, you just, I think you hit that spot on, because in this realm of like authenticity, the lines between sort of marketing and sort of general impression of an organization are totally blurred. Like, those barriers aren't even there anymore. And I've told this story a couple of times over the last week, but a friend of mine works for a massive hotel chain and she works in the sales division. And they have really kind of taken advantage, from my standpoint, they've taken advantage of their employees. They're basically paying everybody like $8 an hour and they're not letting anybody go so that they can't go and take unemployment. And so this is a massive, tough spot that they've put these people in. And I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know if they're doing it because they don't want to temporarily lay people off, because what's that going to do to their stock price? I mean, you start to fill in the gaps with a bunch of negative things. And I'll just tell you, I will never stay at that hotel again. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'll go out of my way to not stay there. And it had nothing to do with an ad. It had to do with how they treated their employees, which, you know, a friend of mine.
Yeah. And it's very telling. Like, we call that dark social. So, you know, it's the word of mouth that, you know, you can't tangibly measure, you know, the halo around your brand and the messaging that you put out there. That's a great example, you know, because the sentiment that's then projected around your brand leaves a bad taste. Gen Z and millennials are running the world now, and they care about the people behind the brand, right, you know, and you know what they discover, right, and what they believe in, you know, is shown in the consumer dollars that they spend, you know, and it's very telling and it makes a big difference, and so it should.
Yes, so it should. And it's kind of this interesting thing, right? Like, as marketing has quote unquote got better, it's gotten better. It looks nicer. It's more all over the place. It's everywhere. It's integrated. It's on all these other different channels. As that sort of has sort of increased on this side of the scale, it's been balanced out for a thirst for authenticity on the other side of the scale, which, to your point, the Gen Z, the millennials, because they're maybe the most marketed two generations that have ever existed in sort of recorded history, they sort through that BS a little bit better, and they're trying to get down to that core, that heart of the company, because that's what they're buying on, this sort of purpose overlap or this why overlap or whatever. And the thing about what we're talking about, which I just love, is that you just can't fake it. You can have all the diversity you want in your ads, right? In your, you know, in your commercials or your print ads or whatever. Mm-hmm. Many times that's a hollow sort of fake, inauthentic, artificial diversity because there's no sort of like authentic heart behind it. And that authentic heart is not going to treat the market any different than it treats their employees. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's absolutely. And at best case, you can get people to then be attracted and join an organization in the masses, but they won't stay, you know? So it ends up costing you money, obviously, because of the disruption, but also you're literally just introducing hundreds, sometimes thousands of people to the truth in not a positive way.
Right.
You know? So we're back to that dark social aspect as well. And the most interesting thing for me is what organizations are missing out on. And this is really where employer brand goes down a separate road to marketing, is the very thing that marketers for years have been conditioned to cover up is the saving grace, the superpower, and the ingredient to authenticity that people crave the most, you know? So, you know, if people are wondering, like when people are assessing organizations, you know, they want to know what are the harsh realities and the adversity I will face in the employee experience. Not from a negative perspective, you know, some people, you know, will look at the barriers or the, you know, the hills that they've got to climb and say, that's too high for me. Like, that's not a company I want to join. Some will look at it and say, it's not big enough because I'm looking for more purpose and to create bigger impact, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you acknowledge what it takes to thrive at an organization, it actually increases the equity and the value of your brand. You know, you only have to look at the Navy SEALs. People are drawn to the Navy. I mean, I could never do it. People are drawn to the Navy SEALs because of something called Hell Week. You know, it's not despite of that torturous week of difficulty to get in. It's because of it, because when they get on the other side, there's a badge of honor, you know, and tremendous respect. And so there should be. And it's interesting. I often ask organizations, what does your organization stand for? What are you proud of? What are people passionate about? You know, what do people champion? And, you know, when they look at all the successes inside the organization, what did they have to overcome? What did they learn? You know, what gaps did they have to bridge? You know, and actually that's where the value and authenticity lies. And the innate marketer in us tries to steer away from that, but it's the very thing that, you know, people crave the most.
And why do you think, there's a lot in what you just said, but why do you think the innate marketer in us tries to steer away from that? Is that because they want to take all of the market and they don't want to be too, you know, distinctive or sort of, you know, cut pieces of the world away? Or, I mean, what do you think that's rooted in?
It's years and years and years of conditioning. So, you know, leaving the house as a kid, you know, I was told to straighten my tie and brush my hair and look my best. You know, you get into school and you've got to, you know, you want to be the top of the class. You get your first job and you want to project, you know, the your skills and all the rest of it. Organizations have adverts filled with features and benefits and competitive advantages and, you know, strengths, benefits, opportunities. It's all upside. So when it comes to being a little bit vulnerable or being, you know, a little bit more authentic about the gaps or the challenges, it's just not innate. It's not in us. It's not in the inner marketer to be honest about the perceived negatives. It's, you know, we're conditioned to just talk about strengths, benefits, and opportunities.
Yeah. So kind of tying that back to your Navy SEALs example, the innate marketer would say, you get all of this adulation and this respect from the guys around you, and you're in this sort of elite group, and you get the nice, you know, I don't know what they wear. You get the cool guns or whatever. And avoid that conversation about Hell Week and avoid the failure, avoid the guys ringing that bell when they can't do it. But
absolutely,
which,
like spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. They don't talk about, the frostbite you get, you know, when you're in the cold, icy ocean water for, 16 hours, you know, literally losing the will to live, you know, going through grueling training exercises and conditioning your body, waking up in pain and, you know, barely being able to survive, you know. But actually, that's the stuff that the right type of people want to hear the most, because they need to assess, do I have what it takes to thrive? Now, the other thing, the other flip side to this is, you know, for every vacant role in an organization, on average, 249 people get rejected. Now, imagine a marketing department that generated a campaign that had 250 customers with money wanting to buy, and they were forced to reject 249 of them. It's unheard of, you know. So they are, their job is to attract, convert. Our job is actually to filter and find the people that are a good culture match, that have what it takes to thrive. So it's actually, if you think about it, you know, on the surface, it seems very transferable, but actually the equation and the challenge at hand is actually almost quite the opposite. You know, we want to compel people, but we want to actually repel the vast majority of people.
Yeah, it's a totally different way to acclimate to this whole situation, right? Yeah. One is sort of talent acquisition, which is, you know, on the surface the same as customer acquisition, but the nature of it, just due to the sort of supply demand dynamics that you just kind of discussed,
yeah,
requires a different approach and requires a different sort of skill set, to your point. And I think, sure, you know, maybe to kind of bring it back to what you're talking about, the more articulate an organization can be about their culture, both sides of, you know, talking about both sides of the blade, sort of the positive and the negative, and being able mm-hmm. to talk about, hey, there are some things about this that you might not like, the more apt they may be in being able to sort through or have a higher sort of confidence interval that the people that make it through whatever the hiring process is are people that are going to resonate with that culture.
Exactly. You know, and if you approach it with that level of strategy and intelligence, the people who end up joining the organization are much more likely to find happiness, much more likely to find purpose, impact, and a sense of belonging, and stay longer and be more productive and be an ambassador and all of those good things, you know. But imagine the Apple store. For every 250 people that walked through the door and wanted to buy a new iPhone, they turned away 249 people, you know. Now, just imagine that. Like, those right. 249 people would not be happy at all, you know. So, you know, when we talk about candidate experience, there's a much bigger risk of damaging your brand if you don't approach your attraction strategy on a more authentic basis. So they can, instead of being turned away from the Apple store, they self-select themselves out so they don't walk in the first place.
Right. So then what kind of things can somebody who's in the HR department, who, you know, everything you're talking about is resonating, they see the sort of strategic advantage that developing sort of an employer branding approach to this game would have, not only on their job, but on the types of candidates that are coming in. But if they're in an organization, let's say, that doesn't have this really authentic culture, that it's maybe more of a lukewarm kind of culture, what do they do in that situation?
So that's a really good question. You know, and what we're talking about now is, what we're potentially talking about now is transformation and change management. Mm-hmm. And when we build an authentic employer brand, there is still room to be aspirational, as long as we're just as authentic about that aspiration as we are about the reality of today. You know, and if people acknowledge, yes, we are good, but we want to be great, and here's the change in culture that we need to make to get there, then mm-hmm. it's another opportunity to, you know, re-recruit the talent you've got and get buy-in in the direction of the business strategy. It also presents a fantastic opportunity to an external audience to say, look, we're not there yet, but here's where we're going. Do you want to be part of the journey? So it can be incredibly compelling, but it does require an organization to be open and honest about where they are today and the difference between where they want to get to tomorrow.
Yeah, and you kind of said this word a little bit earlier, this word of vulnerability. And in order to speak to this aspirational vision for an organizational culture that's mm-hmm. not there yet, obviously, it takes a certain yep. sort of humility and vulnerability that, from my standpoint, I think is hard for a lot of organizations, to show.
It really is. And it doesn't necessarily need to be weakness. And it definitely doesn't need to be something that you paint as a negative about the culture. But the thing is, like, if you look, why is Glassdoor worth over $1 billion? You know, could it be that people don't believe everything that your career site says about your organization or the elements that aren't there? You know, they go to the likes of Glassdoor to find the real truth, even though it seems to be a bit schizophrenic. It's either, you know, severely poor or severely positive. You know, people are going to find out this anyway. And, you know, one of the like big buckets required to attract somebody towards an organization is prove that they can make impact and prove that the organization is having impact. Now, there's no better way to do that than say, here's where we are now. We've got a long way to go, but join us because we need your help to get us there. Now, you could argue that that's vulnerable because, you know, we're saying we're not the great company that we want to be of tomorrow. But actually, there's also strength in being very clear about that and demonstrating the aspirations to get better and better. You know, every organization should have that aspiration.
Yeah. And I think at our core or on an individual level, we all know that we have flaws and we don't believe that we're perfect. And thus, sort of the pursuit of perfection, while a noble thing, we all know that it probably won't happen. And I think we know at our core that no organization is perfect and so forth. And yet, again, kind of to contrast this with this marketing thing, every company on a marketing brochure looks perfect, right? So there's a certain strength, to your point, in an organization saying, listen, we're not there yet, but this is where we're going. And we're not going to get it right all the time. Like, we're not always going to be right, but we're going to get it right. And we're going to fight to get it right. And our heart is to try to grow and become this authentic thing. There's a lot of power in that, to your point. Just that's all the power that I think comes along with vulnerability on a one-to-one management level or on a manager to his team level or her team. But
absolutely.
Yeah. I think what I find is that, you know, this whole podcast really is geared toward trying to help elevate ethics and compliance professionals and HR professionals from this check the box, you know, pigeonhole that they find themselves in where they're treated as a cost center, which is to me totally derogatory and
absolutely
absurd and just a bizarre way to think about the folks who can actually affect culture most readily, the people who can drive change, the people who interact with, you know, like I said before, the organization's first customer, which is the people. What I find is that folks in these roles, they tend to be the most forward-thinking people. The stuff you're saying is resonating with them. This, you know, the diversity and inclusion stuff, they get it before the studies come out from Harvard saying, wow, look at the companies that have D&I, you know, practices, they're really outperforming. Or these other studies that say the most ethical organizations are creating legitimate, you know, alpha in the financial markets and in their stock returns and stuff like that. But what I find is that a lot of these folks are working in a sort of traditional pyramid style structure where the people at the top are maybe more dollar focused. Again, this is a caricature. This is not every single company, of course, but you know, the caricature or the stereotype is the board is dollar focused. People are labor units. I want a direct return for the dollars I spend and so forth. What do we tell folks who, you know, again, you're resonating with them. How do they help elevate themselves out of it in terms of some of those light bulbs on at the top for the dollars to be invested into this authenticity or for the seeds to be planted in the CEO to say, you know what, we're going to sort of show our authentic warts and we're going to be who we are. And that vulnerability is going to turn into a strength.
Well, absolutely. And again, it is about being, you know, transparent about that. And I think there's nothing wrong with having an element of your employer brand aligned with the fact that the business has huge, aggressive aspirations to make profit. You know, nobody is going to be surprised by that. And I also think, you know, happiness isn't pleasure. Happiness is victory. You know, so employees want to feel like their contribution counts, not just for personal satisfaction, but also for the gain of the company. So the key for me is aligning the business strategy and the business objectives with the employee experience. You know, and if you know, I'm a great believer in, well, reinforcing exactly what you've just said, actually, You know, people are the only competitive advantage left in business today. Full stop, the end. You know, everything else can be commoditized. It can be scaled. It can be automized. It can be bought. But people, they are the difference. You know, and I actually predict a couple of things. One, employer brand strategy, people strategy will rise to the top of the pile on the CEO's desk, not just C-suite. And two, savvy CMOs will start to realize that their marketing dollars are better spent in this area to talk about the people behind the brand and what they stand for as a company, because that's more influential to a consumer than the features and benefits of what they're selling.
I think those are high confidence predictions. I actually agree with you 100%. And I think they say nothing changes in 2 years, but everything will change in 10 years. I'm telling you, by 2030, everything you're talking about is exactly what it's going to be. Because, you know, I say that culture is the only competitive advantage. And I think we're saying the same thing, because the people are, yep, the people in the culture is just made up of a bunch of people and how they're sort of acting together. And something else we always talk about is, you're never going to have an organization that your clients love if it's not full of people that love that organization. So yeah, that's why they're your first client. And that's why, to your point, the most exciting stories from a nonprofit that, let's say, is going into jails or going into, you know, youth homes and helping those kids get on the right path. The most interesting stories, to your point, are from the guys who are talking to the kids, the guys who have turned their lives around, the guys who are bringing that light into that dark place. To your point, that's where the magic is happening. And of course, those flowers on the trees are beautiful, and those, you know, those success stories are beautiful, but the real sort of romanticism in this entire thing is that person who's done that U-turn and is bringing those lessons into this new mind. And it's just a metaphor for, I think, what you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely spot on. You know, we're seeing that already, and, you know, we're seeing our work with clients directly impact share price. You know, it's as simple as that.
Right.
You know, and I think it'll go further in years to come, where this will extend. Employer brand will influence guiding principles and also right the way through supply chain. You know, it's like, this is what we stand for, and this is what we demand from our suppliers. This is how ethical we expect you to be. We need you to operate in this sustainable manner. We want your diversity and inclusion numbers to be over a certain threshold, you know, and this is all driven by the audience, you know, the consumers who are candidates, you know, and, you know, wanting to know that the organization is run ethically. And isn't it great? Nice guys finish first for once. You know, it's the first time in a generation that we've got this level of transparency, and people have the thirst and appetite to demand it as well.
So let's shift gears a little bit. I'd like to talk a little bit about your book, because I really love it. I'm not all the way through it, to be totally honest, but everything in it, I'm just like earmarking every page. I'm highlighting all the stuff. It's like, it's everything that I think is needed. It's a lot. It turns on a lot of light bulbs in my, you know, my mind. And I think, to your point, over the next decade, we're going to see a lot of these light bulbs. We're going to see a separation. We're going to see the companies that are going to be that old world approach. You know, it's going to be the same kind of separation for the people who kind of resisted the internet. I don't need a website, right? And other people lean into it, yeah, rock it forward. And then these vestigial companies, they end up kind of dying off. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, tell us about the book, how you kind of got into the author game, how, you know, what made you write this book? Let's just kind of dive into this a little bit.
Yeah, so good questions. You know, I think it's born out of frustration, really, because about a year ago, I saw a post on LinkedIn, and it was an executive career coach. And the post read, warning, employer branding is just marketing spin. And I was like, wow, it's starting to happen where people aren't believing, because we're getting organized about the messaging about employee experience. People now are realizing that, you know, we can apply marketing rules to make ourselves feel more attractive. At the same time, within the agency, we designed our own consultative model And it turned out, and this is born out of naivety more than anything else, if I'm perfectly honest, it turns out that it was completely different to how the industry was approaching the research and the distillation and the construct of messaging and so on and so forth. You know, such that when we first worked with Charlotte Marshall, she was at Magellan Health at the time. She'd worked on four Fortune 500 global brands to build their employer brand, and using our framework, she completely changed her philosophy and approach. You know, when she experienced the give and get and the two-way value exchange and leaning into the harsh realities, etc. But what Charlotte brought to the process was a great level of insight and expertise on the other side of the fence of, you know, what it takes to really build and activate internally. So the combination of those two worlds colliding and that experience was something we talked about and very quickly decided, okay, look, we've got to do something about this. And it started out as, how do we market the agency and give ourselves a competitive advantage and differentiate ourselves to, it's a little bit bigger than that. And actually, we've got to give this away. I mean, our vision is everybody loves their job. And our belief is, if we can help organizations better articulate who they are, candidates can make a better informed decision as to what company they're better suited towards. Employees will remember why they love their organization so much. And we've got a shot at everybody loving their job. And we're only a small agency, but we work with some of the world's largest brands and the world's biggest employers. So it went from a marketing exercise to something that, you know, people have called us crazy over the last 12 months. Like, why are you giving away your secret sauce in the agency? This is crazy. But, you know, like everybody else in the universe, you know, you watch Steve Jobs, you know, compellingly talk about putting a ding in the universe. You know, I want this to be our ding, you know. I want to change the industry, and I want us to steer away from the dangers of trying to brag to candidates and market to them, when actually what they want is transparent honesty and a balanced view of what they can expect, you know. And that's what we're hoping to bring to the industry.
I love that. You know, what's interesting is no one thinks a chef is crazy for putting out a cookbook with all their secret sauce in it.
Do you know what? That's fantastic. I've never thought of it that way. But yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, you know, and we want to be known for this. And it's born out of passion. And we think it can make a real difference, whether it's our clients or not, you know. That's what we're hoping to achieve. It's a big ambition, but, you know, we've taken the first step. The book's out there now, and I guess the audience, the marketplace will, you know, I'll tell us and do the rest.
You know, I love that ethos. I love that approach. That really resonates with me and our company. You know, our purpose is to make the world a better workplace. And whether you're, you know, whether someone's our client or not, we'll work with them and help them to try to make their workplace better. Because, you know, like I was saying before, our clients are really the people who I think are, aside from the CEO, who's really just there to set the stage. They're not actually writing the policies or putting these posters up or doing these things that are actually, you know, carving the channels out for the communication and so forth to, like, you know, occur. Those are the people who I think we can change the world through. That's how we can make our, you know, our ding on the world and so forth. Yep. So it's really encouraging to hear that there's, you know, other people that are in this game who look at the world the same way and are already doing it. And I think you really put your money where your mouth is. I don't know if this is a temporary thing with your books. I know it just came out, but your pricing strategy, I think, is smart. And that's how, you know, for whatever it's worth, that's how I would do it if I was trying to get the message out and put that special sauce out there and let people see, you know, what they're doing wrong or how they can improve, because there's just so much opportunity. There's so much opportunity that's really being left on the table by large organizations in particular that employ all these people to make those better workplaces and make those places that people, to your point, love their jobs.
Absolutely. And we've never been inside an organization and not found absolute pure gold in terms of, you know, employee stories and little tales and, you know, stories that people tell all the time, go, oh yeah, yeah, I've heard that one, that's fantastic. Or, you know, we'd be in a discovery workshop and people will share things, and it's not uncommon for people to break down and cry because it means so much to them.
Right.
You know, and every organization is different, but some things are basic and just human truths, and that's definitely one. You know, so I hope people do embrace the messages, and it's because it's only a perceived bravery for me. It's the right way to conduct research and put messaging and stories together to better reflect who you are. You know, and yeah, we've put the book out this week for just $1 on Kindle and £1 in the UK and €1 in Europe, just because we do want to put our money where our mouth is and just reduce the barrier. You know, hopefully people will seize that opportunity. If they take one thing from it, you know, and they just try one thing or ask a few of the questions that we have suggested in the book, then, you know, hopefully we will have made a bit of a difference.
Well, I love it. The book is just, it's so phenomenal. Like I said, it should be kind of required reading for any of these forward thinking folks who really are trying to be on the cutting edge to make that impact on their organization. Because I guess when I naively got into this game, I just thought I've talked about this a lot, that, you know, human resources, for example, were resources for the humans of the organization. But in some of these sort of old world style businesses, there was really management of the human resources, management of the labor units, and almost fell into this, or in some cases falls into this sort of adversarial relationship where it's the kind of the organization against the people. And what I found in those those, you know, that latter example is there's a lot of people in those roles who no one gets into HR to take advantage of people. They get in because they want to make a difference, and they, you know what I'm saying? Like, they have this vision. Yeah. And I think at some point their wings get clipped or they get declawed, so to speak, and they get sort of chewed up and jaded and they get sort of pigeonholed into this spot. I think your book has the opportunity to like reignite, kindle that passion, that dream that people had as they first got into this game and they really wanted to take care of people and make workplaces better for folks. But for that person that's jaded who might be listening right now, what would you tell them? Is it get off of that ship, it's sinking, you can't change it? Or is it, hey, start global? I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you articulated much better than I would have, actually, in your view of an old way of thinking about HR. Nobody does get into it because, you know, they want to hold people back and so on and so forth. You know, I would say that the old traditional approach to employer brand and employee communications is kind of like, you know, what Blockbuster is to, you know, the Netflix world that we all know, you know. But my message to them would be, give it a read and make up your own mind. You know, to talk about employer brand as a smart filter rather than attraction tool, you know, and to talk about authenticity at the level we do, you know, to a lot can seem counterintuitive, like really counterintuitive, but we're yet to have a real conversation such as this where people don't listen and say, do you know what? I actually see a lot of value in what you're saying there, you know, and that's all we ask. That's all we ask. But I think timing is everything, isn't it? And I think actually what's happening now is, you know, part of the inspiration for this as well is we just see such a huge swell of demand for this approach from the people that matter, the candidates and the employees, that actually, I don't think we've got a choice. I think it's a matter of time before organizations are forced down this route, whether they like it or not.
You're probably right, because, you know, I guess it's like that internet thing we were talking about. Like, you're going to get a website at some point. You're going to be the first guy with the website, or you're going to be the last guy with it, right? You're going to digest this employer branding pill at some point.
Yeah.
Are you going to be playing catch up and reacting, or are you going to be proactive and really trying to lead with that authenticity?
Yeah, and I still think we're in the sort of early adopter phase, but then there's that sort of big middle, you know, to come, which is exciting. You know, I hope that is the case anyway, because, you know, more than just helping people find jobs that they love and finding more satisfaction in life, you know, the ripple effects that it creates, you know, there's a lot of aspiration, millennials and Gen Z, to make the world a better place. And this, we see this as a, as an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think, and this is just, I'm just kind of brainstorming here, but I imagine when that groundswell comes, you're going to see the same fake authenticity, which is kind of an oxymoron, obviously. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, in 3 to 5 years, you're going to see everyone being like, hey, we're super authentic. And you're going to see this really inauthentic authenticity that it's just going to stink. People are going to see right through the synthetic.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. I love that quote. It's, you know, sincerity is everything to me. So when you can fake that, you've got it made. you're absolutely spot on, because like the innate marketer in us is like, you know, when email marketing came along, you know, 15 years ago, we were seeing open rates of like 98%. And now people will do backflips and high fives over a 1% open rate, you know, with email marketing, you know. So again, it's that sort of barrier to BS that you were talking about earlier, you know, that the cynicism, you know, that's what will override and beat down the hacks of, you know, of this approach, because, you know, I don't think this audience will stop until they get authenticity. And what's happening is this audience, like people in general, are getting so much more adept at sniffing out inauthenticity, easy for me to say. You know, so we will always see hacks and people trying to game the system. It'll always go on, but then all that happens in those cases, and we've seen case after case and example after example, is, you know, the middle ground then just have to adapt and get stronger and change with it. You know, this is a living, breathing thing,
right?
You know, we're putting a stake in the ground and saying this is where we believe you should start. And you're right, you know, it will evolve and twist and turn. It's exciting to watch it unfold.
It is exciting. How did you get into this game? At some point, you were a young kid straightening your tie, fixing your hair, and now you're a thought leader in the employer branding game. What was that journey like?
So I was started my entrepreneurship sort of at the age of 25. And it was a general marketing company. My background is marketing and branding and design. You know, and we were a generalist for a number of years, fell into working with a number of recruitment companies, and something just fascinated us. We were a very small team, and we thought, you know, maybe there's something to this, but we were still wearing that marketing hat, you know, and probably, like, so the company's 15 years old, so probably about 8 years ago, we made the decision to really focus into this space and start to question everything and apply marketing rules, and, you know, but over the last 5 years, certainly, as we've got more sophisticated and started working with larger organizations and started to really digest the maturity of what we were doing, that's how we just started to question things and apply what we thought was a smarter way of working. You know, a lot of it was, you know, I was going to say experience is just a series of mistakes, you know, so in that context, we've got a lot of experience, you know, and we've fallen into the position we're in. We feel very fortunate to do that, but very passionate and very thankful. If I wish we'd have specialized much earlier, because life's much easier when you really just focus and do deep work in one area, you know. So it's been an interesting ride, and this is the most fascinating and pleasurable sort of space to operate in my opinion. It's amazing.
So you've had a lot of experiences, a lot of mistakes, a lot of wins. I love what you said before, that happiness is victory, it's not pleasure. So in those victories that you've had along your way, where you've gone into an organization, you've made a huge impact, and you've seen 9, 12, 18 months later, this company is really, it's a battleship that's turning or whatever. What are the similarities? Like, what's the common thread through all of those victories on the company side, mentality side or something? I don't know.
Yeah, one of the biggest light bulbs that goes on is it's not just all coming out of the boardroom and what they want or what they perceive the organization to be. It is accepting that the employee view is probably more valuable and more important than what the C-suite think and believe, you know. And I've seen light bulbs go on and pennies drop in the most magical way. I remember going into the boardroom of Virgin when we announced to them, to their great surprise, we actually ended up getting a spontaneous standing ovation from some of the toughest business people I've ever worked with. Wow. We went in and revealed that the candidate experience was so poor that 18% of rejected candidates were customers going home and switching to their competitor, and it was costing them over $6 million a year in lost revenue that they weren't aware of. So, you know, we made that tangible link of candidate experience to loss of customers, that then we quickly helped them change and open their eyes to the fact that 82% of their candidates were potential customers, you know. And then the dark social thing we were talking about earlier, if they have a positive experience, they go home and tell their mum and their dad and their kids and their auntie and uncle and their friends and this, that, and the other, you know. So brand sentiment from that perspective is incredibly powerful, you know. And of course, people don't realize they're having a candidate experience. They just think they're having a brand experience. They don't see it as, you know, they don't differentiate between the two. So we've seen absolute changes in perception and mindset at an astounding level of magnitude that's really changed the direction of corporate culture in some of our clients, for sure. Absolutely for sure.
So that's so interesting what you just talked about there, because think about that from the client, from the candidate's perspective. There's some kind of core why in the Virgin, you know, brand that they're like, oh, I just want to be a part of this thing. And they step into it and it is like, you know, they say like, never meet your heroes. It might be one of those kinds of things. Yeah. Like they step into it and they're like, whoa, I was dead wrong about this thing. The dissonance is so loud that I don't want anything to do with it, because what I thought was so authentic to the point where I wanted to commit my life to pursuing this purpose with these folks, it's hollow. It's fake. It's inauthentic. Yeah. And they kind of jag right. You know what I mean?
I couldn't have said it better myself, you know. And with a brand like Virgin, you know, you've got Richard Branson and Usain Bolt in your head, you know, and it's fun and it's exciting and it's this, that, and the other. The bar is so high in terms of expectation. With a brand like that, it's very difficult not to fail if you don't take that experience by design very seriously.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'd love, as we're wrapping up here, to kind of pivot a little bit and talk a little bit about this COVID situation and talk about how you are seeing or how you suspect companies are going to win or fail during this time with respect to employer branding stuff, so to speak.
Yeah, good question. And, you know, I think it's also really important to point out that, you know, employer brand is who you are, you know, the employee value proposition, the messaging framework and system, you know, it's just how you sort of articulate it and demonstrate why anyone should care. What we will see is you know, as organizations and therefore people are put under immense pressure, they have to deal with uncertainty and unfamiliarity. We're going to see what a lot of organizations are really made of. You know, and sometimes in the absence of information, people think the worst. So how people strategically communicate to their people, show that they're empathetically listening and reacting, is extremely important right now. And not that organizations need to do anything particularly heroic in terms of actions, but they need to definitely, first base is acknowledge that they're listening and they care. You know, and even to the point where if they haven't got the answers, they're honest about that and they reflect to their employees, hey, look, this is the problem that's going on right now. asking for help and assistance, and you know, in an authentic way, can be a defining moment for an organization. It could actually be an incredible way to galvanize people together. But you know, if you're not honest about it, if you try and paper over the cracks, or you're not empathetic, then you could be in for a much bigger challenge than anticipated. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It's again, kind of to what you said earlier, that the character is revealed in these moments. And if you're going to be inauthentic, or you're going to be fake empathetic or whatever, like if you're on the other side of someone being fake, fake empathetic, I don't know what the word is. You can always feel it. Right. And especially when you're close to the flame, if you're within the four walls of an organization, you can feel that as well. It's obviously hard for leaders who have to make these kind of decisions and, you know, navigate this when they're fearful themselves, to not, you know, to kind of keep that stiff upper lip, or, you know, hey, everything's fine. But, you know, what better time to be sort of authentic and vulnerable and, you know, hey, we're all in this together. But I don't know, where is that line for a leader? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. You know, I mean, you know, my own organization, you know, I think about this sort of every day, and I'm in contact with a lot of our clients, helping them navigate through this. And, you know, what we've been talking about is this is the time to communicate more, not less. You know, people want clarity and they want certainty, you know, so demonstrating that there's empathy, we're listening, and here's the steps that we're taking are just essential right now. But, you know, for those cultures that, you know, have been operating ethically and empathetically for a number of years, this is the bit where they can see that in action. And, you know, if you have an ask of your employee base, look, here's where we are. Here's what we need to do to get out of this or protect ourselves. So here's what that means for you. It goes back to the concept, the simple concept of a proposition. We will do this, this, and this for you. Here's what we need in return. And right now, not only do people take comfort in that, but they also now feel like they are contributing. So there's your impact. You know, they can see the purpose. They can see that it's working towards something meaningful. And if they do it together, they all feel a sense of belonging. So it comes back to those three derivative points, you know. So that's what we're doing. You know, we're trying to keep it simple. And every organization is, you know, different, but we're all in the same situation now. So it's amazing how many times I have that conversation on a daily basis at the moment and see it play out differently. But, you know, but that's what people are looking for, and that's our best advice.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, to kind of bring it back to your book, you know, you kind of keep coming back to those three sort of pillars, right? That purpose, that impact, and that belonging. And, you know, again, just to kind of reiterate your point, this is such a highly concentrated sort of battle, or, you know, it's such a high stakes thing that we're all in, where this stuff is, if it's there authentically, it can really play out in a lot of magical ways. Again, you know, we need to be both realistic about the thing that we're facing, but also find sort of the positive and the opportunity to come together and underscore that belonging and underscore what our impact is and reaffirm our purpose in this realm that we're in, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as a leader, it's our job to sort of walk that fine line with authenticity. And there's absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever of being positive and aspirational in terms of what can be achieved if everybody does pull together. And it's in times of adversity that people will pull together the most and surprise you in terms of what they're capable of the most. You know, I love that when anyone, just for a joke, when anyone says, like, how many people have you got working for you now, Brian? I always say about half of them. You know, because, you know, it's an old one, but it's a good one. You know, a lot of organizations, you know, they get a certain level of productivity out of their people. You would be surprised just how much more commitment and sacrifice and effort people are willing to put in if they feel like they're being treated fairly and they feel like they can contribute and they feel like they do have that sense of impact, purpose, and belonging. you know, we hear stories that are just, you know, heroic, absolutely astounding what people are capable of if you just, you know, talk to them straight, treat, you know, with empathy and respect and give them clarity and certainty. You know, it's amazing what people will do when they all rally together.
Yeah, there's this thing among leadership, and I think this is part of this old, you know, this old way of thinking, this, you know, 20th century way of thinking, where it's like you got to shield them from the truth. It's like you got a bunch of 5-year-olds working for you or something. And they're adults. Yep. They know the realities of life. They know that there's risks and things like that. And I think out of a matter of respect, you have to be kind of straight. To your point, you got to be straight with people. And you get a lot of respect back, I think, from being that, you know, transparent, authentic partner in whatever purpose you're pursuing, you know?
Exactly. And it's exactly the same principles we were talking about earlier, about just talking about the sunshine truth of what it's like on your career website when you're trying to get candidates to apply. You know, you're spot on. You know, people are savvy, they are intelligent, and they need to be treated as adults with respect and giving it to them straight. And at least that way you control the narrative. It's better than them reading about the doomsday version in the Wall Street Journal, or, you know, because that creates panic, uncertainty, it blurs the line and takes away clarity and makes things ever more difficult.
Well, it's like you said, people are going to fill in those blanks with something, and they're either going to fill them in with the transparent actual truth. They're going to fill them in with what they tear apart from the inauthentic truth that's given, or they're going to fill it in with their own worst case scenarios. It's just like how humans work, you know?
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, communicate more, not less, and, you know, listen and take questions and be approachable and talk to managers and leaders about engaging conversations and face into people's biggest fears, because, you know, usually on the other side, it's not as bad, or at least people know what they can do to contribute towards navigating away from, you know, some of their worst fears. You know, and there's a lot of people out there working remote, alone and isolated for the first time, thinking the worst and not really knowing if their work makes a difference right now. And if you make matters worse and tell them everything's fine, then you're not going to get everybody pulling together and making a contribution when it counts the most.
Got it. Well, Brian, thank you so much for spending your afternoon with us. This was really a insightful, exciting conversation. Brian Adams, co-author of Give and Get, Employer Branding, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. Do you have anything you'd leave us with? Any little pieces of advice to somebody who's listening, who's trying to elevate themselves out of their check-the-box pigeonhole?
I would just implore people to give the concepts in the book some space and see what they think. I would welcome feedback, and I'm very open to dialogue. You know, if people want further advice or want to discuss any of the points, you know, I'm sure people can tell by now I'm very passionate about this and eager to help.
How can people find you? Obviously, they can find the book on Amazon. How can they find you and learn more about your, you know, follow you or find out about your organization and things like that?
Yeah, so if you go to ph-creative.com, that's our agency website, or giveandget.net is all about the book. I'm on Twitter at Brian, BRYAN_PHC. And I'm easily found on LinkedIn. It's Brian Adams 1 on LinkedIn.
Very good. Well, Brian, thank you so much. This was really a great, great time. Thanks for joining us on The Ethics Expert and for all your work and thought leadership in this space that I think is going to revolutionize businesses and separate us over the next decade.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Really, really enjoyed it.